Hello, welcome to the Basketball Soap Box. I'm your host, Daniel Daly. Thank you for joining me right before Christmas, right before the holidays. I was sick last week, so I didn't get to talk on a couple of topics, but I'm going to talk on a couple topics right here, right now. I'm going to be talking about the Draymond Green suspension that happened right when I got sick, so I wasn't able to talk about that, as well as a look to the NBA Christmas Day games, which is always awesome. Can't wait for that time of the year. It's usually a good checkpoint for the middle first part of the season to look back and look ahead at the games here. But first, I'm going to start talking about Ja Morant and his return to the NBA. Ja Morant has suffered a 25-game suspension, of course, for showing firearms on IG Live, content detrimental to the league, suspending him 25 games. Adam Silver laid that out, and Ja Morant has been gone for 8 months. And he returned on Tuesday night against the New Orleans Pelicans, first game in 8 months. The Grizzly season is basically down in the crapper at that point. 6-19. Marcus Smart is hurt. Steve Adams is out. Brandon Clark is out for the year. Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane are left to carry this team of what's left and have just been struggling, especially on the offensive end, which has been the pretty difficult thing to navigate without your star point guard franchise player who gets around nearly 30 a game. So Ja Morant coming back to basically kind of save the day, and we're glad that he's back, because after all those court proceedings that happened just a week prior, you're having lawyers tell him to pass the ball in court and demonstrate how to pass a ball. There was another prosecutor, I believe it was a prosecutor, telling him to directly punch her in the face. And after seeing all that, I'm just like, yo, just get this guy back to basketball where he belongs and get him to play again, especially for Memphis Grizzlies, a small market team that desperately needs his star power and have been to the playoffs the past, what, 3 seasons ever since the bubble season, have been able to get to the playoffs, above 500 team. And right now, everything is not looking good for the Memphis Grizzlies. But there is a ray of hope here with Ja Morant coming back in that game on Tuesday. That team was down as much as 24 points against the New Orleans Pelicans, against Zion, Brandon Ingram, and CJ McCollum. And it looked like it was going to be a blowout. And I was about to turn off the game, but then I tried to give myself, especially in this day and age where threes are prevalent and comebacks happen all the time, I tried to give myself a little bit more way of the third quarter, and that's what I did. And the Memphis Grizzlies mounted a comeback led by Ja Morant, coming back in that game from 24 down, and you couldn't have written it any better. Him hitting a game winner at the end to get the 115-113 victory over the New Orleans Pelicans, and you couldn't have written it any better. Ja Morant getting 34 points there to end the game, 27 points in the second half. And it just reminded me of that Brandon Roy game. I believe it was 2011. I believe the Dallas Mavericks were up on the Blazers. And Brandon Roy came in and just came back and just had a crazy performance. He was coming back from injury, kind of saving that series a little bit for the Blazers. They still lost in six. But him coming back and giving a little momentum and a little boost to the Portland Trail Blazers, who were desperately in need of him way back. Go check for that game, Brandon Roy. Injury sucking part of the game of basketball, and Brandon Roy was one of those people that in basketball that was taken too soon from his career. But just having that type of aura to Ja Morant's return and performance on the first night back, missing 25 games, your team under 500, your team is not healthy against this New Orleans team that's been kind of tough on the season. To come in just fresh off like that and to give his team a ray of hope. You know what I mean? And that's really what all it is right now for the Memphis Grizzlies with Ja Morant and him coming back. Secondly, he came back against the Indiana Pacers, him and Tyrese Halliburton. Tyrese Halliburton has been storming up, has been tearing up the league this year, especially with that in-season tournament run. They've been struggling after that, but that was a good game, a good test for them to come back in and to see Ja Morant go up against another young star in the league. And to do that, Ja Morant just comes in and scores 20 points. Maybe the adrenaline wore off for him in that game. But over the first two games for Ja Morant, he's averaging 27 points, 8 assists, 5.5 rebounds a game. And that's right around where his averages were last year. And just to think about Ja Morant's star power and the impact that he has on the Memphis Grizzlies, he changes their offense. They're dead last in the league in offense, and they're a top 10 defense. So the story of that has just been – the Memphis Grizzlies struggling with Desmond Bain and Jaren Jackson carrying that offense, even though those guys are producing, the rest of the team really can't. That creator for them is not there. That guy that draws two isn't really there. And now John Morant's returning to that. Maybe the Memphis Grizzlies can find some type of hope here on the second, well, heading into the second half of the season. There's 55 games left. And to think, I was talking with some guys and they were like, I don't think they can make the playoffs. And I'm like, I would have believed that in past years, but because of the play-in tournament where teams usually just win 35 to 40 games, right around that edge there, they would have to go 27 and 28 the rest of the way. So that's just under 500. They're already up 2-0. So there's optimism there for Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies for me, because I just think that he's that impactful. And for him to get, what, nearly 30 points a game, even if it's around 20 plus points a game on this point of the season, that's a big plus for the Memphis Grizzlies, who is still a top 10 defense, even without Steven Adams, without Brandon Clark. For Ja Morant to come back and give a shot in the arm to that offense is going to be something that's very, 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 very good for the Memphis Grizzlies, I think. And I think I give them a shot, even in a tough Western Conference right now, where they're probably, what, dead last, just above the Spurs, I believe. I'm just pulling up their record here. Yes, they are third from the bottom there. They're only a couple games back. The Phoenix Suns are now 500. They lost tonight against the Kings here tonight, 120-105. But when you're looking at this Memphis Grizzlies team, who are they going to knock out? I give them a chance, at least to give themselves a chance, even in this tough Western Conference, which has been hampered by injuries. When you look at the Clippers, you look at the Pelicans, you look at the Mavericks, who are dealing with some injuries. The Lakers have also dealt with some injuries. The Phoenix Suns, of course, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and Kevin Durant haven't even played a game together. And when they did, Bradley Beal got hurt. So looking at this weird Western Conference, even with the Golden State Warriors, there's still a chance there where the Memphis Grizzlies can make a push and get to the play-in, at least 35, 40 wins. That's where I'm looking at. Hopefully go 27 and 28 on the rest of the season, looking at it from that standpoint. But I'm giving them a chance to get in there. And looking at what they've got to go up against in the Western Conference, it's been a tough road, you know, navigating without Marcus Smart for, I believe he only played 11 games, so he's missed 16 games on the season for the Memphis Grizzlies. Hopefully he comes back soon, and this team can really start looking like themselves, even without Steven Adams and Brandon Clark, who there's no timetable on time to return at this point. But looking at what Ja Morant's bringing back to the Memphis Grizzlies, I'm giving them a chance. And the NBA needs Ja Morant, because that's a guy in a small market that's bringing more eyes to the game. And the way he carries himself, that team carries themselves, and you can see with the game winner, the picture that I have right there, that they're very happy to have him back. Very happy to have him back. But moving on here, let's talk about, of course, the Draymond Green suspension. This happened during a game between the Golden State Warriors and the Phoenix Suns. Yusuf Nurkic and Draymond Green got into it a little bit, and Yusuf Nurkic was grabbing him at the hip a little bit, but nothing too excessive, right? Like nothing like it was like back in the day where they're slapping their hands or anything like that. He was tugging a little bit, but nothing crazy. And Draymond Green said he tried to sell the call, overhand rights Yusuf Nurkic and sends him down to the ground. And after all the stuff that has been happening with Draymond Green over the past couple of years, just a couple of weeks ago, choking Rudy Gobert after altercation with Klay Thompson. And I can't, was it Jaden McDaniels? I can't remember who it was between those two, but Rudy Gobert comes over, grabs Klay Thompson, trying to break it up. But in those situations, I was thinking about what Charles Barkley said. You want to just want to stand there. You don't want to grab anybody because you might set somebody off. You also have, I believe it was Alvin Gentry and Chris Long, way back in the day, and he threw him down and separated his shoulder. All the stuff like that where bad stuff can just happen. And that's what happened. And Draymond Green went in there and gave Rudy Gobert the old Roddy Piper sleeper. And that was a whole big thing. And he got suspended for that, 5 games for that. And the latest thing, when he knocked down Yusuf Nurkic, the league said that was basically enough. I believe the Warriors said that was just enough. That Draymond Green was suspended indefinitely the next day. And to think about that, I can't even think of a suspension like that that wasn't drug-related, like O.J. Mayo, Tyreke Evans, guys like that, that had those type of suspensions where it was like, we don't know when you're coming back. And now looking at this Draymond Green suspension now, do I think Draymond Green is an unhinged individual? No. Do I think that Draymond Green is an instigator? Yes, that's been his whole career in terms of mucking up the game, taking cheap shots here and there necessary. There's other guys in the league like that. But Draymond Green seems to be the one that does it excessively and gets caught. And that's the thing here. Do I think he's a threat to the game of basketball? No, I don't think it's to that nature where he can't be in the league or anything like that. I think he's a hothead and he gets a little emotional at times. And yes, he does get into these situations. But one too many, the league kind of has to halt everything and kind of get him under control a little bit here. Because at this point, it's getting to the point where the league has tried to get away from that type of behavior where somebody's going to punch him in the mouth. And that's pretty much it. If this was the 80s and 90s and stuff like that, a fight would have already broken out. We know that. We know that. Even in the mid-2000s, something would have happened. But over these last altercations, no one's trying to get thrown out of the game. No one's trying to get suspended. No one's trying to lose money. But it's getting to that point where Draymond Green keeps getting into these situations that somebody's going to put hands on him. And that's not to say that Draymond Green is going to be a punk and not try to go back at them or try to fight them or joust with them or anything like that, because I don't think Draymond Green's a punk in any situation. What people are saying, what he is and all this other stuff, like he's targeting European players and all that stuff. Yeah, there's a little part of that or whatever the case may be, but he's going after guys he don't like or people he feel like are taking advantage of his teammates in those certain situations, or he's just being clumsy. Whatever the case may be, I do think it's a part of him coming to mortality, right? And when you look at the Golden State Warriors, they were struggling. And you look at where Draymond Green is at in his career, he's older. Yes, he does. He did get that contract and stuff like that. But you are older. Teams are kicking your ass. And you might get frustrated. And I think it's something that Charles Barkley alluded to. When you're getting old and you're starting to get to that point where these young guys are kicking your ass, that you start to be a little bit more pissed off. Like, man, I still got it. I got this. And at some point, just getting a little weary right now in his career where he's on the last doorstep of his career, right? Like, this is his last contract. This is probably going to be his last run if the Warriors can find a way to get back on track. And it's getting to a point where it's just not cost-effective towards the Golden State Warriors anymore, where that type of play and that type of impact, probably his last run, it was in the NBA Finals against the Boston Celtics, which really sucked, and I felt like he should have been kicked out of a couple of games for some of the stuff he did. I believe it was game two when he was basically playing football out there, and they let it happen. And that was the last-ditch effort. And now it has successfully helped the Warriors win four championships. I'm not one of these people that say Draymond Green can't play, he's not effective in the league and stuff like that, and he's a bum and all this stuff. He's actually averaging the highest points per game, I believe, since 2017-2018 season at nearly 10 a game. So he's bringing back his scoring up. The passing is there. The rebounding is there. He's around his numbers overall. He's shooting the ball the best in his career. Maybe that's because of the lower amount of games he has played. But he is shooting the ball really well. So there's something there to Draymond Green wanting to stay around in the league, wanting to stay on the Warriors, wanting to be vital to the Warriors. But his actions, he has to be really careful as he's going through this suspension. Because during this suspension, the Warriors were, 9-13 under 500, looking like they were struggling. They have been 7-6 without Draymond Green. Think about that. 7-6 without Draymond Green. So that's 13 games he's missed on the season. They're currently 14-14 at 500. In the last five games, they're 4-1 without Draymond Green since the suspension. And now that's been over the Nets, the Blazers, and the Celtics, which was a gut-crushing win, and I'm not going to talk about, but it was a great win for the Golden State Warriors, and they beat the Wizards tonight. The only loss for them has been against the Clippers. Now, is this Warriors thing going to continue? I don't know. But looking at the play of the guys over the last five games, you look at Klay Thompson here. I have the numbers here. Klay Thompson has had a resurgence at 25 points per game. Klay Thompson looked like he was crap in the water last month. And then all of a sudden this month, especially these last five games, he's coming back to a different Klay Thompson where he's averaging 25 points. He's usually around 20 points a game. Couple, he's going to have a little hot streak here and there. But he's at 25 points per game and really stepping up in the absence of Draymond Green, and the Warriors desperately need him. Steph Curry's almost at 25 points per game, struggling shooting the ball, but he's actually getting a little bit of help, especially from Jonathan Kuminga, who has been playing really well and has been getting those Draymond Green minutes, a real large clump of those minutes, and Andrew Wiggins' minutes, because Andrew Wiggins has been also been playing poor a little bit as well. And I've been impressed with Jonathan Kuminga, especially in the Celtics game, especially him playing defense on Jason Tatum. Yes, Jason Tatum had a sprained his ankle in that game, but Jonathan Kuminga overall has been playing really well and has been providing a boost in effort and really scoring the ball efficiently, especially at 60%, I believe he is, over the last five games. So he's really playing well, and something desperately that the Golden State Warriors desperately needed to tap in him with Moses Moody and those guys, because I feel like they really needed a chance to get a way to play with some mistakes, you know, get into those situations where they're going to be called upon and be held accountable. And you can't just bench them and try to go to your vets at that point. You're going to have to stick with them. And so far, Steve Kerr has been doing that. And Jonathan Kuminga and these young guys have been playing real. Brandon Pazinski has been shooting the ball really well and providing some energy plays for them. I believe he got hurt a couple nights ago, but he's been able to play. He's been playing a real bright spot with him. Trice Jackson Davis has also been playing really well. Actually traded from the Washington Wizards and ended up on the in that trade with Jordan Poole, and has been nearly a double-double over the last five games, and he's been providing a boost for them, especially with Kevon Looney. They have not been playing Kevon Looney. I don't know if he's hurt or whatever the case may be, but his minutes have gone down, and Jackson Davis has been stepping in and playing in that role. So when you're looking at it from the standpoint of that with when you're playing with that standpoint of the Golden State Warriors and you're getting these young guys now that are producing, looking at it, it's like, how does Draymond Green come back into that? How does Draymond Green, whatever suspension this is, whatever he has to complete, whatever checklist he has to complete in order to get back, what does that look for him coming back? How does he fit into this team? And that's going to be an adjustment, because Chris Paul's already being the secondary ball handler. You got Jonathan Kuminga playing really well. You got this guy Jackson Davis, who came out of nowhere, playing well for them. And that's what the Warriors need. They need their youth and energy to come back. So Draymond Green has to be really careful. I don't know what team would potentially trade for him. I know there'll be a couple teams out there that will take a shot at him and stuff like that. But if he's going to stay back and see how this Warriors thing comes back, whenever he comes back, people are saying it's going to be 20 games. If the Warriors can even be above 500 at that point in time when Draymond comes back, that's a big significant thing in the Western Conference right now, where they're desperately needing wins. They're outside the play-in tournament right now, the play-in game right now. So to think about that, where we are in the start of the season, it's a long NBA season. As I said earlier in the other part of this episode, there's roughly 55 games left of the NBA season. 20 of those games, if they can stay above 500 and the Warriors are producing and those young guys are providing energy and giving Steph and Klay the support that they need, Draymond Green has to be really careful how he comes back and what role he plays for this team, and try to figure out a way how he can massage his way in there and play with effort. Maybe continue shooting the ball well, be another playmaker with the ball, be a type of Boris Diaw type player. How Boris Diaw was for the Spurs, with less kicking and choking and hitting and punching and belligerence on the court towards the refs. But if he can come back and play that type of role for the Warriors, where he can kind of really shoot the ball and improve his shooting and hit those spot up threes, or just alleviate the pressure off the front line like that, that's the role Draymond can come back and play for, I'm thinking, in terms of what this team needs. Other than that, his usefulness on this team is going to be slim to none, because these other young guys are really stepping up right now and are less expensive and paying dividends so far for the Warriors in the last five games. So there's that. There's that for the Golden State Warriors. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe as always. Let's move on to Christmas Day. At first, we have the Knicks versus the Bucks. The Bucks are second in the Eastern Conference at 21-7, 8-2 over the last 10. Not really doing their thing on the defensive side of the ball. I believe they're 20th in the league on that side of the ball, but I believe they're second in the NBA scoring the basketball, and that's what Giannis leading the charge with Dame, and those guys are kind of feeling each other out and figuring it out so far over the course of these games. They're going to be going up against a tough matchup with the New York Knicks, who have kind of found their footing a little bit, kind of trying to find their way, led by Jalen Brunson, who has been leading the charge and has been playing really well so far for the New York Knicks on the season, as well as Julius Randle, who is not having tour dates anymore, apparently has been playing a lot better and stepping it up. He has averaging 22.7 points per game, nearly 10 rebounds. So those guys have been leading the charge for the New York Knicks with RJ Barrett following up behind them. And I know Becky Hammon, coach of the Las Vegas Aces, came on and said unfavorable comments towards Jalen Brunson, basically saying he's not a 1A guy, he's not a franchise guy. And she said that it's very rare that you get those type of guys. There's Steph Curry, there's Steve Nash, I believe she said Isaiah Thomas. So there's very few guys of a track record that shows little guys of his stature leading a team and getting it done. And Kendrick Perkins got upset. Of course, New York faithful got upset, and I understand what they're saying, but I kind of agree with her. Not in terms of that those guys can't be impactful players for your team, but as a franchise guy, it just doesn't happen. And when you look at the Eastern Conference, you got Jason Tatum, you got Giannis Antetokounmpo, you got Joel Embiid, you got all these other guys that are at the top of the helmet for a reason, right? You got guys like Jimmy Butler as well. You got these other guys that are just a little bit tougher, a little bit more accounted for as franchise guys in the league. And when you look even on the Western Conference, you got the Joker. You got Steph Curry, who was mentioned as well. You got LeBron James historically, Luka Doncic. All these guys that are franchise-changing guys are usually bigger. You know what I mean? It's very rare that you get those guys that are small in stature and providing wins. And that's not a knock on Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson can be a Kyrie Irving type player. I believe that as in the NBA, he can be that type of player where a franchise guy who needs help, Jalen Brunson's that good support system, right? Like that's what Dallas did good when they had him with Luka Doncic, and they provided – and we saw the instant regret that they had when he wasn't there. But now we have Kyrie Irving, you got Dante Exum playing well next to Luka Doncic. So there's that. But in terms of what Jalen Brunson brings to the table – efficient, he's going to be tough, he's going to get to the line, he's going to score, he's going to get buckets. That's what you want for the New York Knicks. But as a franchise, they're going to need another guy to go with them. They're going to need a star to go with them. And him doing it by himself, and especially with Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, where those guys aren't really going to elevate their games to another level, Jalen Brunson at the head of the snake is good, but you're going to need somebody above him. That's all that is. That's not a knock on him. That's just what it is. And looking forward to that game because that's going to be a tough defensive matchup. You know, of course, Mitchell Robinson's out. I believe he's having ankle surgery. So that sucks for the Knicks. But, you know, the Knicks are going to try to bring it, and hopefully they can survive the onslaught of Giannis and Dame. And on Christmas Day, it's in Madison Square Garden. It's going to be the first game on Christmas. So it's going to be interesting to see how that game goes. Moving on to the next game, looking at the two past NBA champions, the Golden State Warriors traveled to Denver to face the Denver Nuggets, Nikola Jokic. Jamal Murray has been playing really well the last couple games since coming back. And the Nuggets have just been on cruise control, getting play out of a lot of guys out there, KCP, Christian Braun, Aaron Gordon has been pretty good. Reggie Jackson has had a resurgence out there. KCP, you're getting some guys out there that are playing really well. Of course, Nikola Jokic leading the charge there, one of the leading MVP candidates. I should say that because there's been an impressive play about somebody I'm about to talk about in a little bit that has been on a tear. Nikola Jokic nearly at 27 points per game, 12.4 rebounds, and nearly at 10 assists. He's just doing his thing and leading the charge for the Denver Nuggets. And Denver Nuggets have been coasting. Jamal Murray has missed like almost a month with an injury, but they're 20-10 on the season, playing really well. And former champions trying to keep pace in this surprisingly good Western Conference. The Oklahoma City Thunder are there. The Minnesota Timberwolves are there. Surprisingly, the Minnesota Timberwolves, who I'll talk about in a later date, a later episode. But the Denver Nuggets right now just leading the charge right now, being great at home, struggling on the road. But they're going to be all right. And looking at this Golden State Warriors team who has been trying to find some footing here. I just talked about them with the whole Draymond Green situation, but have so far been 5-1, 4-1 over the last five. So there's some hope around there poking for the Golden State Warriors. This old team trying to hang on, especially when you talk about the 2022 championship and how they had to fight for that and overcome all these young teams, the Boston Celtics, Memphis Grizzlies, teams of that nature. And then to finally win the championship. And of course, after last season, the Jordan Poole punch, setting that team back. And now you're just looking at the change of the guard here, right? The Denver Nuggets seem to be the new kings in the Western Conference. The Golden State Warriors are the old kings trying to hold on, trying to find a way to get back. And this is a good matchup between two stars, Nikola Jokic and Steph Curry. And, of course, we can't wait to see that game and how that turns out. Moving on to the greatest rivalry in the NBA, the Boston Celtics versus the Los Angeles Lakers. It writes itself. Green versus yellow. It writes itself. Magic and Bird. Kareem and Parrish. McHale and Kurt Rambis, who we clotheslined in the 1984 NBA Finals. All that stuff. This is history right here. Of course, Jason Tatum and LeBron James leading the charge for their respective teams. Hopefully, they're good to go. LeBron James has been out with rest. Jason Tatum has that sprained ankle. We're going to see if he's good to go against the Clippers on the 23rd. I'm filming this pretty early on the 23rd. So looking at this matchup here, history, the past couple years have been thought of being chance of an NBA Finals. Just two teams that are just in different directions, right? The Los Angeles Lakers are 4-6, have been struggling, losing to the Spurs, losing to the Bulls. Who did they lose to the other night? I can't remember. Let's see. Losing to the Timberwolves. Tough game against the Timberwolves there. They got the Thunder tonight on the 23rd. And looking versus the Boston Celtics, who are 8-2, defeated the Cleveland Cavaliers back-to-back, the Orlando Magic back-to-back. Lost to the Golden State Warriors the other night in the heartbreaker, which was a tough game because it's like we just have demons in that building. Hopefully we don't have to see the Warriors ever again. And we turned around and beat the Kings without Jason Tatum. So looking at it from that standpoint and looking at what the Celtics are rising, and hopefully they don't drop this game because I want the Celtics to kick the Lakers' ass. That's just what it is. As a Celtics fan, we want that to happen. I've been wanting the Celtics to go went out on this road, this last homestand, this last road trip. I said they were going to go 6-2, 5-3, depending on what happens. So far, they've been playing really well. They are 5-1 with two games left on this eight-game stint here that we've been looking at. So looking at it from that standpoint, looking at the Boston Celtics, who have just been kicking on all cylinders, Derek White has been able to just be this third star for the Boston Celtics in a way, filling in, really knocking down shots, shooting the ball well, upping his scoring tick. I believe he's nearly at 17 points per game, the fourth leading scorer on the team, with him and Jrue Holiday providing havoc in the backcourt besides that game against Steph Curry, and just not able to slow him down. But these guys have been scoring, playmaking, doing everything, all the little intangibles that the Celtics really need, especially for their stars, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And then you add Porzingis, who's been able to stretch the floor and be able to be a third option, a rim protector. Loving what the Boston Celtics are doing right now. I just want to see, as I'm always going to say on these podcasts until it happens, I just want to see what happens with this bench. There's been a couple guys that have been playing, Quetta and Sam Hauser, and Peyton Pritchard has been seen to find his shot. So that's good for the Boston Celtics overall, and we're going to need them against the Los Angeles Lakers, who are looking to get bounced back, especially dropping off these last three. LeBron James has been out. Anthony Davis has missed a game here and there. So it's going to be interesting to see what this rivalry brings again, and seeing, of course, the Lakers want a bounce back game. And that's what I'm hoping that they don't do against the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics have been able to make things a little harder for themselves, as we've seen against the Golden State Warriors the other night, but hopefully they're able to put this Lakers team away, who was struggling, especially with D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura and all these guys, and trying to find a constant rotation. Definitely a battle, though. That's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Moving on to the Sixers and Heat. two teams in the Eastern Conference who are finding their footing. The Miami Heat have been coming along, especially led by Tyler Herro, who's scoring the basketball right now. I believe he's at 24 points per game. Of course, you got the excellence of Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. Those guys are just going to bring it on a nightly basis. But looking at a surprise pick, the Miami Heat have just resurrected Duncan Robinson, who fell off from the bubble and got that big contract, and everybody was saying that was a dead pan money and waste of money. He's nearly at 15 points per game and shooting the ball better than he has over the past couple of seasons. You got Jamie Jaquez Jr., who just they drafted, and it was just, hey, this is going to be a guy that's going to play, what, nearly 30 minutes a night for us and play really well and just be all the intangibles, all the things that you think of the Heat that you got with Caleb Martin, that you got with Max Strus, who's in Cleveland now, all these little intangibles things. They resurrected Josh Richardson. The Heat culture exists. And Miami, who I thought that was in trouble, that didn't do anything over the offseason, didn't get Damian Lillard, didn't really have any free agent signings, just found a way to just stay consistent and stay good and continue their role. I believe they're 6th in the Eastern Conference, but they're 17-12 on the season. Now, looking at the Philadelphia 76ers, Jimmy Butler, who played for them, who I think should have been still in Philadelphia, getting left there for Tobias Harris and Al Horford. Tobias Harris is still there. Al Horford obviously routed to the Thunder, routed to back to the Celtics, and has been playing really well for us in old age. El Presidente, I call him. But looking at the Philadelphia 76ers in that James Harden fiasco and how they have righted the ship, right? And Nick Nurse came in here and said, hey, we're going to change our offense a little bit. A lot more handoffs, less dribbling, less pounding the rock. And there's going to be more ball movement. There's going to be more player actions. There's going to be more players involved in the offense. And they have gotten that. And led by Joel Embiid, who has just been on a tear at the season, averaging 35 points per game, nearly 12 for rebounds a game, and nearly 2 blocks a game. So looking at what Joel Embiid is bringing to the table on a nightly basis for this team and basically saving this team, who is 20-8 right now, and 3rd in the Eastern Conference, just looking at what Joel Embiid is doing on the season for this team that was supposed to be dead after the James Harden trade and everyone thinking, hey, this is not going to work, whatever the case may be, Tyrese Maxey, no James Harden, all this other stuff. James Harden, Tyrese Maxey couldn't wait for James Harden to leave because he was rubbing his hands together like Birdman. And so far he's been fantastic, 26 points per game on the season, nearly 7 assists. Now, Tyrese Maxey, we thought as a heat check guy, he can go get some buckets and stuff like that. But I didn't think he was going to be a playmaker. And for him to be in this offense, him and Joel Embiid getting all these assists, Joel Embiid's nearly at 6 assists a game. Looking at what Joel Embiid and these two guys are doing in this two-man game with this offense, with Tobias Harris as the 3rd leading scorer, and Kelly Oubre Jr., who has been a nice addition for them. Kudos to Nick Nurse. Kudos to Joel Embiid. Kudos to Tyrese Maxey for just leading the charge and saying, we're not going to fall off. We might not be the favorite in the Eastern Conference, but goddamn it, we're going to put it together. And we're going to put it together well. And we're going to make sure that we're at least talked about. And we're not going to be forgotten. And kudos to those guys. I don't know what's going to happen in the playoffs, but right now that team is looking good. And kudos to them. Those guys playing really well, putting it together on the season. Have been on a tear. I believe they just had against Toronto 3 teammates score 30 points in a game. Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris all scored 30 against the Toronto Raptors. So that just shows you where that offense is, where their confidence is. And heading down to the South Beach, I give them a chance. They're going to be good. Moving on to the Dallas Mavericks. Moving on to the Dallas Mavericks and the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns have been in a tailspin, have been without Kevin Durant a little bit during on the season, Devin Booker a little bit on the season. Bradley Beal looks like he has not played all season. I believe he's only played like 2 games or something like that, with a back injury, and then he recently came back and then sprained his ankle. Really tough, really tough. They lost to the Kings tonight, 120-105. And just trying to find some type of consistency. Devin Booker and Kevin Durant have been leading their way with the offense, but the defense just isn't there for this team. And you're trying to figure out what is going to happen. And I don't think Bradley Beal coming back is going to help them in that regard. So I don't know what options they have in terms of roster wise. They're very limited. People have a lot of hope for Bol Bol. I just don't see it for him on this team right now. And especially we're a team that they need his punch, maybe need his length to provide some rim protection. He's barely getting in game. So they don't trust him to get in the game as well there. But yeah, they're really struggling just at 500, 14-14 on the season. Now looking at the Dallas Mavericks, Kyrie Irving has missed some time, 23 points on the season, but led by, of course, Luka Doncic, 32.7 points per game, 8.4 rebounds, 9.1 assists, and leading the charge for this team and has been playing really well. Tim Hardaway Jr. has been shooting the lights out for them. And you're just wondering if Dallas is going to make a trade at some point. And people have been saying Kyrie Irving to L.A. would suffice, and that has been the rumor mill on the – that has been the deal on the table. And for the longest while, especially with D'Angelo Russell playing like crap, if I'm Dallas, I'm like, I'm not looking to do that. I'm looking to try to get Pascal Siakam or OG Anunoby from Toronto. I'm trying to get into Zion sweepstakes. I'm trying to figure out a different way rather than trying to just peddle Kyrie Irving to the Los Angeles Lakers, which was a pipe dream, and I just don't think it's going to happen at this point in time. I just don't think that's going to happen, especially when he's playing well, when he's healthy, and when he's playing alongside Luka Doncic. So I just don't see Dallas doing that. And in this matchup, Dallas is playing really well. Dallas, Luka Doncic, of course, they had that playoff series where Luka Doncic was looking Devin Booker in the eye and smiling up big. Everyone said the Suns had COVID and stuff like that, but Luka has been religiously kicking their ass. I believe the Suns got the win the last time these two teams met last year. So looking at it from that standpoint is going to be interesting. You know, it's going to be tested between these two Western Conference teams. This has been a rivalry since Steve Nash, right? So Steve Nash got went to free agency, went to the Dallas Mavericks, and I mean, went to the Phoenix Suns and turned around that team with Amar'e Stoudemire and Sean Marion. And Mark Cuban didn't want to pay him because after that matchup with the Spurs, I believe, what was it? Was that 2005 playoffs? Was that 2005 playoffs when that happened? And he didn't want to pay him and all that stuff. So that's stemming from that. This team has, these two teams have been going back and forth after each other since then. And to see it renewed and see it revived with all these different players, Western Conference matchup is going to be good. Christmas Day is going to be awesome, especially with all these games lining up here. And I can't wait. I can't wait to see all these games on Christmas Day. I'm going to be traveling, but it's going to be good. We have, 5 games slated on Christmas Day. A lot of interesting things happening in the NBA. And we're past the first quarter mark of the NBA. So I want to do a first quarter recap, maybe have some a guest on and talk about the league. In what their thoughts are around the league so far, because it's good to bounce those things back and forth off people. And look at some stuff around the league. Of course, with the first quarter going on, we got the Minnesota Timberwolves at the top of the Western Conference, the OKC being a surprise out there as well. Boston Celtics kicking ass. I love what they're doing so far. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers right there. The surprising Orlando Magic have been playing really good, led by Paolo Banchero. What's going on in Cleveland? A lot of injuries, broken jaw for Darius Garland. Evan Mobley's out a bunch of weeks. Donovan Mitchell has been out lately. And you're just wondering what's going to happen with that team because it just seems like they're stuck in mud. We'll see if Indiana can pick it up after their in-season tournament run. Looking around here, the Kings, seeing if they're going to make a trade. People have been talking about Keegan Murray, and I'm like, I don't think they're going to trade him. The Clippers. I'm going to give my thoughts about the Clippers at the quarter mark. Hopefully when I do my quarter mark episode. Yeah, they've been playing well, but I'm not going to say fool's gold, but the schedule's been favorable to them to build some consistency. The Pelicans are surprisingly 17-12. And that's with inconsistent play from Zion Williamson. So that's interesting. Houston Rockets, Ime Udoka. Looking at it from that standpoint and what they've been doing with that young team, they've been playing tough. Kudos to them. Can the Lakers pick it up? Can the Lakers pick it up in the Western Conference? So I'm going to touch on some stuff during the quarter mark episode and go over that. I don't know if that's going to be next week or potentially next year during the new year. So we'll see with that. But keep supporting the channel. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. As always, continue to show support for Ring Takes, my wrestling podcast with Brian and Lewis. Been getting a lot of feedback on that. Continue to do that. Continue to like, comment, and subscribe. Loving what I'm seeing. Thank you guys so much. If I don't see you for the rest of this year, I'll be checking in next year with a brand new episode. But thank you for joining me, as always. And until next time.